live and direct. You are on yet again another episode of the Bro Diallo Show, Q4 Radio, AM 1680. Thanks for tuning in on this February 13th in the year of your Lord, 2017. So we have an interesting show today. So let's jump in with both feet. Yes, this is Bro Diallo, back at it again with the Pan-African perspective. Yeah, I'm a few minutes late. It's not my fault. Oh, it ain't my fault. But I won't even bore you with the details because there's so much more interesting and salacious stuff to get into that, you know, we won't even remember the lost, stolen moments of my tardiness. Anyway, It's Valentine's Day Eve. So if you have any questions about love, relationships, intercourse, you know, how to keep the spark alive in your relationship, anything related to intimacy, sex, love, romance, relationships, feel free to contact the Bro Diallo Show. Feel free to message me on Facebook Live with your questions. Maybe you could tweet me, whatever. Get at your boy, and I will solve all your problems. I will get your man together, sister. I will. Just let me know. I'll help you get him together. And brothers, if she's not all the woman that you need her to be, get at your boy. Seriously. If she's too assertive, not, you know, upholding her Quranic, biblical, Turanic duties, insufficiently submissive or dutiful as a helpmeet, she's not being a proper Eve to your Adam. Whatever it is, man, whatever your point of view, right? If you are so advanced and so enlightened that you are a polygamous, polyandrous, Omni-Andry, whatever your point of view, purview, as it comes to human intimacy, contact, and whatever, get at me, because this is the day, the only day that I will, on February 13th, will help you. So if you get at me today with your issues, then tomorrow will be the best St. Valentine's Day you've ever had. And I know many of you don't even celebrate St. Valentine's Day. So if you just know that the power that I have to tell other people how to run their lives and their interpersonal relationships, the power that I have, you know, because my position is, it ain't no act like a lady. Or think like I'm a man, or act like, my thing is think like a rationalist and act like you got some damn sense. That would be the book I'd write on relationships. Anyway, we'll get more into that later. There's some other stuff I wanted to get into. You know, this Muslim ban thing, Trump's Muslim ban, which he's taken three solid L's, Trump's first major setbacks and defeat of his, you know, whirlwind presidency, his almost Cinderella rise to political prominence, out of relative political obscurity. You know, this is stuff that political scientists are going to have to write about and stuff that political science students are going to have to review and write about for decades. This is just really a cornerstone moment. You know, Obama's election was historical, you know, because, you know, he had Nubian features and kinky hair. But when the way Obama governed, like I said, he was a mediocre bureaucrat. You know, he did a good enough job. But when everyone thought his the physical attributes of his election, a black man being elected to be president over a nation that was founded on the enslavement of black people and sustained and sustains a status quo of racist aggression and discrimination against black people. That's quite historical. So people just made the logical, illogical connection or logical fallacy that because his very election was a radical historical thing, that he would govern in a radically historical way. And he didn't. I mean, you could have put almost any mainline Democratic governor or senator in place and you would have gotten the same thing. So Obama just figured, like, we got enough history. We got enough radicalism. We got enough historical content just in my being elected. So I don't have to translate that radical visionary thing in reality into my policies. I'm not going to be historical in the way I govern. I'm not going to be groundbreaking in the way I govern. I'm going to be very status quo. I'm going to be as status quo as you can get. I'm going to be quite boring, actually. So, you know, if you really want to relive those moments of emotional exuberance, then you got to go back and watch my inauguration tapes or something, because I mean, politically, it's going to be kind of boring. No, nothing radical. You know, I'm going to take a tired policy developed by the Heritage Foundation, boosted by the Republican Party, implemented by my political opponent, Mitt Romney, the Mormon White Horse Prophecy. And I'm going to impose that, you know. I'm going to build on the Patriot Act. I'm going to advance the Project for a New American Century. And I'm going to do some, you know, grade A, dyed-in-the-wool type Democratic stuff, like, you know, reform for student loan. I'm going to expand the Pell Grant, you know, throw the crumbs to our constituents. And that was that. So that's what you get. But Trump, on the other hand, Trump is saying, hey, there's the status quo is not working for the majority of the people. There's a lot of deadlock and stagnation, and I'm about to blow this mother up. I'm going to turn this mother out. And unfortunately, when things fall, when things, you know, are knocked over, sometimes they can fall to the left or they can fall to the right. And since when Obama was governing, you will notice that even his supporters, you know, there's a progressive journalist, historically a well-known progressive journalist who lives in D.C., who breathes D.C., Bill Press. And he wrote a book called Buyer's Remorse, where he was basically talking about just how right-wing Obama was. And he had the same fallacy that many of us had, that because Obama's very presence, his very election, his very body, his physical being was a radical thing, that maybe he would have some radical elements to how he governed. Since the very gall to run for president was a radical thing for him to do, and actually win the presidency was even revolutionary thing for him to do, we figured that there would be some radical and revolutionary elements in how he governed, which there wasn't. So he said that there was a level of buyer's remorse. So even his supporters, even his progressive and liberal, especially white and black supporters, knew that Obama leaned things to the right. He leaned things way to the right. He pushed things. He was on the right in terms of immigration, in terms of economic reforms, in terms of saving the auto industry, military. Oh, he was far right of many Republicans in terms of military support for Israel, imposing drug laws, deportation. He was to the right. So everybody was like, even though things are leaning to the right, we just don't see any real fundamental change. And the change isn't coming intensely enough or fast enough. So we want somebody to really change things. But when you knock something over, the standing status quo, it's going to either fall to the left or to the right. And so Trump came, and since Obama had already leaned things to the right, Trump's going to knock things all the way to the right. And what's the right end? The conservative end, the nationalist end of the political spectrum, where you have the left is the progressive, liberal, pro-masses versus anti-pro-elites to the right. So they people gave, I mean, Obama was pretty much America's last chance. Obama was the most liberal, progressive, positive person that this system, because you can't, this system is structured that certain people cannot take office. If you are truly a progressive, if you are even a real liberal, you can't take office. Because, I mean, just take any issue. If you take a truly taxation, if you're truly progressive on taxation, you become ineligible for political office. Because, number one, if you want to run under the Democratic Party, you have to adopt a Democratic platform. Right? And the Democratic platform on taxation is they've pretty much adopted the 1970s platform. Right? We promise to reduce taxes or hold taxes down, balanced budget. Now, the old Democratic platform, the Roosevelt, that say, hey, what are we going to do? We're going to do deficit spending. We're going to open up and we're going to tax upper income rates. And we're going to redistribute the money to the masses. The Republicans abandoned, the Democrats abandoned that. Now, remember, the president that brought socialism to America was the longest serving president in history. He served four terms in office. And everyone says America's a capitalist country. And then you have to ask them, why was the most popular? The dude had to die. And the Republicans were so afraid that they would never have another opportunity to hold the White House again, that they codified the fact that a president can only serve two terms. That was not codified up until the great socialist reforms of the New Deal. So the most capitalist nation in the world's most popular leader was implemented social, and he wasn't a socialist. He just said, you know, if we don't implement socialism, we will not have a country. The United States would have done what they have come to call balkanized, you know, with various warlords, corporate warlords taking over various sections. It would have looked more like Afghanistan or Serbia and Bosnia. So anyway, let's take it all the way back. Obama leaned the country to the right. In order, because Obama, even though he was supported by the left and the left put all their hopes and dreams, Obama pretty much understood, I don't have to do anything for the left except exist. Because my very existence, like, remember when Jay-Z said, my presence is charity? When people are like, Jay-Z, there's so much going on, and you and your wife are the most premier black folks we got on deck right now. You know, because Cosby had his issues, we ain't got no more. You're the number one couple, you know, aside from the Obamas. After the Obamas is Jay and Bay. So they were like, you should be doing more. You and your wife are worth almost $1 billion. You know, you should be contributing more. And that's the whole, you could go look it up. I'm not making this up. He was beefing with Harry Belafonte because Harry Belafonte was criticizing these artists today, saying, you know, you came up on the backs of black culture, black community, black support. Before white folks knew who you was, it was black folks, you know, bumping your stuff and they cars. So you should always give back. You should always hold true to that obligation. Like Harry Belafonte in his day put up great amount of resources and put his own personal career and his own life at great risk to speak to the general needs and interests. And so ultimately Jay-Z said, my very presence is charity. Okay? So Obama was kind of like, my presence is historical. So he knew he didn't have to do anything for black folks, but also there's a whole segment of white people that he didn't do nothing for either, which are the truly white progressives. And the white progressives, unlike the black folks, were writing books and making all kind of noise. Remember during the campaign between Hillary and Bernie, Bernie had written a foreword to a book that was critical of Obama's policies. And Hillary was using that to beat him over the head because both of them were trying to say we were trying to sell themselves as an extension, as a continuance of the Obama White House. And so Bernie was saying, I'm not going to destroy what Obama has built. I'm going to advance it. And Hillary said the same thing. And she said, you can't trust him because he was critical of Obama. And then Bernie countered with, you're the one that ran against Obama and said Obama wasn't fit. So, you know, but that was the thing. So the progressives weren't quiet about their disappointment with his drone bombings and all the other stuff. They were very vocal. So their hopes in. But Obama said, for you hippies, for you white hippies and for you black people in general, my presence is all the change and hope you need. My presence is all the reform and advancement you need. My example that my family sets for you. Take that example. Take it in your house. Boil it up. Season it. And serve it. Because that's all you get. And that's it. And so, even though there was a time for radical historical change, Obama blew it. So this was inevitable. Because if you keep leaning to the right, keep leaning to the right as Obama was leaning to the right, eventually it's going to break right. And you're going to go from a lean to a complete fall and collapse. And which is where we are now. This couldn't have happened without Obama and Obama's policy. That we couldn't be here. But anyway, Trump had his first three losses. And Trump is pretty much, I don't know, out of ignorance or whether this is calculated. Some of his stuff is so stupid that you're saying nobody could be that stupid by accident. This has got to be calculated. So Trump has a very tenuous, because you got the three co-equal branches of government, the judicial, executive, and legislative. Trump has almost half of the legislative branch in open opposition to him. And then slightly more than half that have a very tenuous, tense relationship. The Republicans will embrace him if they think it would help them in their reelection efforts. And they will go against him if the tide of the society turns against him. Well, not even the society, because even though when people go to Congress and the Senate, they're supposed to represent the nation, their main thing is to say, you know, what can I do here so that when I go back to my district, I can use that to boost my reelection bid. So nobody's really there. The system is broken. The system is broken. And I don't know, you know, why we would be upset about that as black folks. You know, if the plantation master came out to the cotton fields and said, well, I have some you all you niggers put down them cotton bales and have a seat. I got an announcement to make. This here plantation is going bankrupt. Now half the slaves are going to be, oh Lord, what will become of us? But the other people will be dancing. So, and who would be the, oh, Lord, who would be swooning are what I call the black necks. So you got black people right now, even revolutionary conscious, pro-black, African, Bel A, Ma'at Hotep cats with like 15 hyphens in their name. They wanted a name for every region. Zulu, you know, Shaka, Hotep, Chakra cats that are like, yeah. You got cats that are upset that the plantation is bankrupt. And then he'll say, well, now I got more bad news. We having a serious problem on this here plantation with trespassing. People sneaking onto our plantation and picking cotton without permission. What? And then you have slaves that would stand on the plantation and like, they taking our jobs. You mean to tell me our financial of the plantations isn't in order, the financials of the plantations are out of order, and we've got trespassing on our plantation? Oh, that's not the end of it, boy. Now sit down, like I said, and I got some more bad announcements now, boy. Let me get through my words. And so you'll have half the black folks like, they ain't got nothing to do with me. I didn't even want to be here. You got a few of us on that end. But most of them, even the angry blacks, even the blacks that you know, spit in the stew, that be stealing extra chitlins and provisions from even the militant, many of them will swoon. It's like, so financials of the plantation, the books of the plantations are out of order. We got trespassers sneaking on here picking cotton. And then you'll say, well, boy, and then we got threats. What kind of threats? Well, people that hate our freedom, like the Indians, are threatening to attack, and they're sneaking onto the plantation, setting fires, threatening to scalp me and my and the mistress. And they're a threat. They're terrorizing our plantation. Oh, Lord, they're terrorizing. Now, we got our books is out of order. The financials ain't together. We got people sneaking on, trespassing on the plantation and picking cotton and baling hay when they ain't supposed to. They ain't qualified. And now we got threats, terroristic threats to our plantation, sir. Yeah, so what we gonna do? And that's the mentality you have of people right now here today, black people. So when I hear black people talk about the economics of America, the illegal immigration into America, the United States, black people, we weren't freed. We were emancipated. And what there's a difference between being freed and emancipated. Remember the Emancipation Proclamation. Our humanity, our very humanity, let alone our freedoms and rights, are legislated. Right? And I'm sorry, I do want to get to talking about love and romance and sex and flowers and chocolates. I do want to get to that because it is. So I will get back to that. But I don't hear the calls coming in. I don't see the questions. So if y'all don't want my love advice, then so be it. Go ahead and be in your miserable little funky relationships when you could be having the greatest love, most functional relationship, and the best sex of your life if you just would come to me. Brother Diallo, the love doctor, just today. But no, let's stick with the politics then. Fine. But anyway, you got black folks that are so invested, so integrated, that have so hitched their wagon to the Western imperialist train that when the empire is in trouble, they take it personal. Get them out of our country, Trump. All these illegal immigrants taking my job. Black people saying this. Terrorists trying to attack our country. And I had a black militant dude talking to me about national security. And I'm like, if you can find one square foot. No, that's too nice. Find one square acreage in all of the United States. That is millions of acres. Hectares upon hectares of land. Find me one square acreage on U.S. territory. And I'll even let you include Puerto Rico, Hawaii and Alaska, where black folks have ever been secure. 1 week of security since the Plymouth Rock fell on us, as Malcolm X said in the movie. As Denzel playing Malcolm X said, Plymouth Rock fell on us. Since the day Plymouth Rock, when have we ever had any place where we were secure in this country? Find me a square acreage and I'm going to move there and live on that acre of land. You know, and every time I can't even go on social media to look at, cat videos and funny memes without seeing some depressing, heartbreaking nonsense about black people trying to explain to black children how to interact with police. Hands up, don't shoot. I'm not, please don't tell me you got a man of melanated skin. I like melanated. I don't want to say black people anymore. Thanks, Dr. Umar. When I turn on and I see a melanon, yeah, that's even better, space age. I see a melanon brother or sister on the thing talking about how we could be secure. So how you got a melanon talking, let me stop. How you got black people talking about national security? That's an alien concept to us. You know, like synchronized swimming or something. I mean, what that got to do with us? And yeah, maybe you do have one or two cats that do the synchronized swimming, but it's just something so far, even though it's something we've heard about, something, you know, we might have some concept of, it's nothing we need to be busying ourselves with. National security? The national security of the United States, what that got to do with me? What that got to do with any black person within the confines, within the empire of the United States? What is it that you think national security is? So when the police officer goes home, he can feel safe and secure so that he can make it home safely to his family, rest, eat supper, and sleep, and get up another day of terrorizing us? Landlords can be safe as they go about evicting us, or banker and investment capitalists can go be secure as they deny us loans and income? What the hell does national security mean to black folks within the confines of the United States? I mean, yeah, we if the terrorists, I mean, how are we even gonna look? We can't even look. Our terrorists are not bearded men in turbans. Our terrorists are well-shaved, well-polished men in suits with badges and billy clubs. So I don't know what it, I mean, it just blows my mind. It blows my mind. Black folks, y'all blow my mind. And not in a good way. Not in a Valentine's Day way. Not in a flowers, oil massage, Luther Vandross, up under the sheets kind of. That ain't the kind of mind-blowing y'all doing for me. Y'all doing, like, literally, like, IED roadside bomb mind-blowing. Just blowing stuff to bits because y'all confused the hell out of me. Just when I think I got something figured out. Just when I thought, well, this Trump thing. Now, black folks have been in, not asleep. Black people have been in a deep self-induced coma for the last 8 years, especially when it comes to anything political. But now Trump then woke us up. Trump then grabbed us by both shoulders and then gave a whole hood shaking baby syndrome. Then shook us so our damn head came loose from our spine. And I'm like, yes, okay, now, y'all ready to listen to some stuff y'all wasn't ready to hear in 2008, 2009, 2010, 2000. Y'all wasn't really to hear this. Now maybe y'all ready to wake up and hear the message, right? But guess what? Nope. No. Uh-uh. And then y'all went from, Obama ain't got to do nothing for black folks. Or, you guys, it's all on us. We don't take preference. And y'all had all kind of excuses for Obama. But now y'all on some, get those immigrants out of here. You know, they took our jobs. And guess what? That same hustle was ran on white folks. That's why I think we should study white people. I don't agree with the black people that say, we don't do enough talking. We need more talking. Because we lack understanding. I don't know how else to communicate to MFers. I don't know how else to get the, I mean, I could talk it, I could write it, I could color it, I could sing and do interpretive dancing. I mean, but there's only so many ways we can, communicate. And I think we need more communication. And if you think talking is not a viable form of communication for you to get a message, then, I mean, maybe writing. However you get information, you need to do more of it, get more information. Right? Because they ran the same hustle on white folks. Now, the Clinton, back in 1992, white folks were like, we doing bad. And doing bad for white folks, I know, is different than doing bad for black folks. Doing bad for black folks is like, I don't have food for my kids. And doing bad for white folks is like, I can't go to the private golf club. I had to go to the public golf club. This is unacceptable. This is an outrage, right? So I'm not saying that we do bad equally, but from their cultural, economic, social, racial point of view, they were doing bad in the 90s. And what were they going to do? Look at Reagan? Blame their Saint Reagan for their hardships? Are they going to blame the fact that they, from the mid 1940s and the 1950s, when the middle class was established in the United States? That starting in the 60s, the mid-60s, when they did their conservative move against black people, that they had been eroding the New Deal reforms, that they have been pretty much shooting their own asses in the foot, to quote Dale Jones. Dale Jones said, sometimes we really shoot our asses in the foot. So white folks started economically voting against their own interests in order to count the black liberation struggle that evolved out of the black integration struggle. And I don't want to get caught up in that history. Just take my word for it. White folks by the early 1990s felt like they were doing bad. And they were under the impression that black folks, that Reagan had told them there was this mysterious creature like Bigfoot, like the Yeti, like the Loch Ness Monster called the Welfare Queen. And this is the woman who was living in an immaculate home, wearing furs and diamonds, and driving a Cadillac. All on food stamps and welfare. Reagan told white America that the United States is trillions of dollars in debt because they were giving so much of their hard-earned tax dollars to black people. No lie. I'm not lying. Go back and look it up. And Reagan had this thing called the welfare queen. And so even some journalists in the 80s were like, can you give us her name? Why isn't she in jail if she's committing welfare fraud? Can you tell us these ladies living lavish off of the welfare and Medicaid? Where are black people buying Cadillacs with food stamps? Tell us where. What, name the auto dealership. But black folks fell for it. White folks fell for the okey-doke. So they couldn't blame their elites, their gods, their role models. Just like the Obamas was role models for us, Nancy and Ronald Reagan and Ron Reagan Jr. They were role models. White folks got role models too. We forget. I know some of us, we got leaders that tell us white folks ain't human, that they're Cocos Mountain cave dwelling devils. And I don't like to dispute that point too often, but sometimes we got to admit to ourselves, yeah, they're biological primates. You know, they might even be, there are some differences. But they have some similar characteristics to us. Can we at least say that? So anyway, white folks was like, we're doing bad, and we can't blame our role models. So who are we going to, we need to target a population that we feel superior and unworthy and doesn't belong. So they said black folks. And so Reagan said, yeah, it's the black people, and we need to cut them off. They're dependent on our system. They're taxing our system. They're not even fully worthy, and they don't fully belong in our system. They're getting a free ride in our system, right? But because Reagan had to contend with a Congress that was heavily not just Democratic but progressive Democrat, not these neoliberal Democrats. These were actually old world, Keynesian, New Deal Democrats. So now we don't have any more New Deal Democrats. You did have some like Dennis Kucinich was a New Deal Democrat. I suspect that Elizabeth Warren. So you do have some old school New Deal Democrats. But most of these new Democrats are what they call neoliberal Democrats. And the terms don't really matter that much for my point. But when Reagan had two terms and then Bush had a term. And so they were like, man, the Republicans have had three terms in office. We got to get with the Republicans because obviously whatever the New Deal Democrats were like, we can't win elections on a national level anymore. So in order to win elections, we're going to have to suck a MC. We're going to have to bite off of the Republicans. So anyway, that's when you got Bill Clinton. And Bill Clinton said, I will succeed where Reagan failed. I feel your pain. And he was talking to white folks. I feel your pain that you have to go to the public golf club. You don't have the money anymore to be a member of the private golf club. You have to go golfing where there might be colored people golfing there on the hole behind you and ahead of you, you know. And it's bad enough you have to turn on your TV and there's Tiger Woods, and then you go to your golf club. It's not even a club. It's a public golf course. And anybody can go. So I feel your pain. So I'm going to succeed where Reagan failed. And people are like, white folks are like, huh, I'm going to cross lines. I'm going to do something I normally wouldn't do, and I'm going to vote Democrat. Because the Republicans have been promising me a new world order. Remember Bush's 1,000 points of light. They said they were going to get rid of this welfare thing, so stop having these unworthy black folks siphon and leech off the system. So anyway, here comes Ronnie Reagan. He's gone. Here comes Bill Clinton. He's in, and he did it. For the first time since the 1940s, he had some serious retractions of the New Deal and New Deal guaranteed social welfare. He started eroding and destroying the public's the social safety net. And the white folks were so happy. Even white Republicans were like, you know, we hate you. We're going to try to impeach you, you know, and we're going to send that Mossad agent in. Monica Lewinsky, Mossad agent, this ain't a tinfoil hat moment. Let's back off that. I'm just saying. And white folks was dancing in the street. They were doing river dancing in the street. Y'all remember river dancing? The lord of the dance. I mean, they got more nerve than a toothache. Okay, whatever, man. Who remember? Raise your hand if you remember the river dancing craze. We let white folks slide on stuff. They never let us forget nothing. A brother snatch a white woman's gold chain on the subway in 72. White folks don't forget. But we let them do stuff like river dance, and then we let it slide and, you know. Okay, after Bill Clinton's reforms, white folks were river dancing up and down the block, you know, hands on the hips, and those feet were moving, clackety clacking, all up and down. Like, yes, we've got welfare reform. No more of a white now. And guess what? What happened as a result of that? Did the white people finally get enough money to go back to the private golf club and have to stop using the public? No. They got even deeper into economic trouble and distress. Even more foreclosures, even more bankruptcy, even more meth and delusion and heroin. Why? Because they lied to you about what your problem was. And they offered you a fake solution and allowed you to target a vulnerable population while leaving your true enemies unidentified and unhampered. Duh. White people. How many white people, raise your hand, white listeners, if you're saying after Bill Clinton stopped and got rid of the welfare queen, drove the Bigfoot into extinction, if I can get people, oh, Bigfoot's going to come and snatch our babies, I give me $1 million and I'll hunt Bigfoot down. You give me $1 million, I go home because there's no Bigfoot to hunt. And then Bigfoot never shows up to snatch your babies and you think I succeeded. So this welfare queen was driven into extinction. Until she was resurrected by Umar Johnson and other black demagogues. But that's another discussion. But she was driven into extinction. And so white folks had all this money just rain down on them, all these tax breaks. The U.S. economy, the budget was balanced. The trade deficits were gone, and because we were no longer received any more benefits from the government, black people became the puritanical, hard-working Protestants that the white man always knew we could be, right? Wrong. And none of that came to pass. None of it. Because they were lying. And so now black folks, and this happened to white folks in the 90s. And white folks still ain't learned their lesson. They haven't learned that lesson. But now they're doing the same thing to us. You literally have conscious black people talking about the same thing. Buying the same hustles. You know, you got black folks talking about keep them out of our country. We really got black folks thinking that, what time is it? Dang. That immigrants are the reason we're suffering. Like before the immigrants got here, it was all good for black folks. And let me tell you, immigrants did cause our suffering. But it was the immigrants that came on the Nina, the Pinta, and the Santa Maria back in 1492. Those are the immigrants that got you in a bind. And until you deal with them immigrants, don't deal with those are the immigrants we got to deal with. The Quakers, the Pilgrims, the Puritans, those are the immigrants that caused. So I'm not saying immigrants ain't the problem. We just focusing on them. But anyway, folks are like, we need to deport the illegal immigrants because they take their jobs. They take jobs from black folks. And I have to ask black people. You really think, because Obama was called by the Latino, Hispanic immigrant population, that he was called the deporter in chief. Obama had a record number of deportation. He surpassed the mean old racist Reagan. He surpassed Reagan. He surpassed Bush 1. He surpassed Bush 2. And, of course, his homie, his stromie, the Clintons. He surpassed all of them. Over 3 million deportations. He had a record number of raids. He literally took the shackles off of ICE. Immigration Custom Enforcement. ICE agents. I mean, if I had to be a fascist, gun-toting bureaucrat, I would want to join ICE because that's just like the coolest acronym. Like, who wants to be BATF? BAFT. Even FBI is sullied. And CIA still has its vicious sex appeal to it, thanks to those Bourne movies, but I'm an ICE agent. ICE, you know, Ice-T, Ice Cube, just ICE. ICE just has, you know, it's cool. ICE is cold. It ain't even cool. That's cold. Remember when people were like, oh, dog, that's cold right there. So if I ever go fascist, I would like to be an ICE agent. But he unshackled the ICE agents. But like I said, he did it so smooth. He did it so cool, you know. He's the kind of dude that will talk you and ease you into. He will seduce you whereas the Republicans just grab you by the pussy. So we basically told black folks, are like, you know, I hate to be sleazy, but tease me. I don't want it if it's that easy. We want to be seduced. So anyway, Obama did what you wanted. You just didn't recognize what he was doing because you didn't look at his policies critically. You didn't look behind the cloak. You looked at the big screen where the Wizard of Oz was telling you all this wonderful stuff, and you never bothered to go behind the curtain. And now, you know, the Wizard of Oz, the new Wizard of Oz, y'all want to rip down the curtain now, but it's too late. Because the current, and Trump keeps reminding people every single time, whether it's his immigration, his anti-crime, his policies on Israel, drone bombs, the anti-terrorism, he keeps reminding people, it's like, Obama did this. Basically, he's like, you know, even the raids, the ICE raids and the bombing raids, the 50 bomb, all of those are just me basically doing, finishing off and capping off what Obama had already set into motion. Y'all are literally protesting Obama policies now. And people tell me Obama's out of office. That raid in Yemen, where the Navy SEALed and when they went in there and shot up those babies with high caliber rifles, killed a little 8-year-old girl to protect our freedom. Trump said, I didn't plan that. He said that was planned and conceived and greenlit by Obama. And I'm just clean. You know, you've taken jobs before. You got a new job and the dude you're replacing has still got a few things you have to cap off before you can really get your shine on. Come on. Y'all know how it works. And if Hillary was in office, that raid in Yemen would still be going on. Those ICE raids would still be going on. The deportations would still be going on. But y'all wouldn't be protesting. But anyway, just like when Reagan, Bush won, and Clinton said, I'm going to save white folks. I'm going to help white folks. I'm going to restore white folks by welfare reform. And then you got stupid black people who think that jobs are going to start raining down in the hood now that there's a repressive immigration policies have been advanced. It's stupid. It didn't work. And like, just go to your white friends or your white employers or your white lovers. Turn over in bed to your white spouse and say, honey, since the 1994 Welfare Reform Act, has your station in life, has your economic standing really improved that much? Did Clinton return to you all the money that he stopped spending on food stamps, housing vouchers, health care, school grants for poor people? Did he return that money to you? Go ahead and ask your white friends, your white colleagues, your white spouses or lovers. Ask them. And if they might lie, because, you know, they always front. White folks front. They like to front like they balling when they not. We think we invented balling and fronting. Nope. But anyway, ask them. And so black folks, I promise you, whatever you for, whether you, because I know a lot of black folks don't like Latinos. And then that just George Lopez, Jorge. Don't call him George anymore. He's Jorge Lopez. Jorge Lopez got up on stage and said, there are only two things that you tell Hispanic people, two rules. Don't date a black and don't park in front of my house. Now, listen, how many of y'all are lined up for them Mexican women anyway? I mean, seriously. I mean, I know we like the Jennifer Lopez because there's different, like, just like, I'm going into sensitive territory. I don't know, trigger warning. If you're anti-stereotypes, please tune off for just a few moments. Okay, trigger warning alert. This is becoming an unsafe space for the sensitive and the enlightened. All you enlightened folks, step back for a moment. Now, we all know there's different kinds of Latinos or Mexicans. There's different kinds. You got your Jennifer Lopez's, you know, and your, what's her name? She used to be the man. She was the female love interest in Do the Right Thing. Rosie Perez's, right? You got them. But then you have what is Iggy Azalea? I didn't say it. Iggy Azalea said the box body Mexican. Remember Iggy Azalea? Everybody's like, she's so racist because she said that Mexican women got box body on lock. But, you know, the squat women, you know. But those are like the Mestizos, the Native Mexicans, the Aztecs, the Incas. I mean, obviously somebody want that because, you know, because they're Catholic, you know, they have a lot of children, they have stable homes, right? Good for them. But you know what I'm talking about, the squat. I mean, who's lined up for that? I mean, I just don't see brothers. That's just not what brothers are into, you know. What I know from the brothers I run with, maybe you like some brothers that are into that. Like, I don't think that's really an issue for the Mexican community because let me tell you, Mexican dudes, you know, like Puerto Ricans, that's something different. Dominicans, that's something different. Even like Honduran. But when you look at those nations like Honduras, Puerto Rico, Dominican, they're mostly black folks. And they've already well contaminated with black blood. So, you know, brothers, you know, shout out to Janet Price. I even dated a Honduran girl. I didn't know she was Honduran till she started cussing me out in Spanish. Because she was a sister. She was black. You know, and then I had a coworker. She was Dominican. Again, I didn't know she was Dominican until she started cussing me out for coming in late and she had to cover part of my shift and take on some of my cases. So a lot of times, especially if you live in New York, let me tell you, especially this is some free love advice, even though nobody's asking me love advice. If you find a sister or a brother in New York and you're like, hey, and you start hollering and start getting serious, purposely piss them off. Because a lot of times you don't know where people are until you piss them off. You meet a sister or a brother and they say, hey, you know, let's holler. Let's go get something to eat. Let's go get some drinks. Oh, and then you're like, yeah. And he'll be, yeah, well, I'm quite fond of you, perhaps. But then you piss him off. And he's like, whoa, wait, hey. So if you really want to know their ethnic heritage, piss them off. I'm not kidding you. There was this one. She was a nutritionist. I was a student and she was a nutritionist. And she was so well-spoken. If I thought she was from anywhere, from foreign, I would have said, you know, she's from merry old England because she spoke the Queen's, I mean, she enunciation on point, all right? And I was like, wow, you're a nutritionist, and I'm a student here at Downstate. Hey, let's go on a hot date. We went on a hot date. We talked back and forth. One time, it was over the phone. I pissed her off over the phone. I didn't know who the hell. It was like, your bumba rice, go lick your mother. I said, I'm on a blood clot, scant, bum, 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 bum. Like, wow. So anyway, a lot of times. So even though you see brothers with Dominicans, Puerto Ricans, Hondurans, Panamanians maybe, to a lesser extent, Panamanians, Brazilians. It's a lot of times brothers think they got, and the sisters think they got somebody, Jabon Jones from up the street. They think they got some Mississippi mud skipper. Some Chicago slick cat. They don't even know they're dating someone from foreign. So a lot of times, Jorge Lopez, we don't even know we got a Latino in our pocket until we piss them off. We didn't even know. And by that time, we often stuck. So, but it ain't like I don't see brothers on the West Side chasing down your women. So I think this is a mutual treaty. We can sign this. Anytime you want to write up that treaty, stay away from our women. I will sign off on that treaty as a representative. You can have your women, Jorge, keep them. Okay? Okay? Oh, that's Cuban, right? Okay? Yeah, and Cubans, brothers like them some Cubans too. But I'm just saying, Jorge, Mexicans, you know, now we might have to negotiate. Like I said, if the Cubans, the Dominicans, if they say stay away from our women, then I'm like, those are our women too. They're not just your women. So, you know, there's a lot of Africans there. And truth be told, there's over 1 million Africans in Mexico who y'all are racist against. So I'm just saying this is a controversy. I'm glad it's out here. So. Let's just talk. I'm saying Mexico strictly, I'm willing to sign that treaty. That stay away from our women treaty. You stay away from our women, we'll stay away from your women. Okay? Okay? Let's do it. I'm willing to sign that treaty, Jorge. You keep your women over there with you. No problems from us. Now, like I said, Dominicana, Brazil, we not willing to sign off on that treaty because y'all already got too many of our people on your side. So, I mean, those two gene pools have already been sloshed together and swished around in our mouths. So it really ain't no point in even discussing that. But Mexico, if y'all want to get on some eugenic shit, go for it. Sorry about the cursing. But anyway, let's get back to the issues. It's Valentine's Day Eve. I told y'all to call me in. Wait, I think I got a question. Nobody called. I said I was giving love, sex, relationship, intimacy advice. Not one freaking call. And this is the only day. Would y'all want to be like that? Y'all don't want to fix your lives, your love life? You don't want to intensify your passions? Because it's not the Bro Diallo show today. It's the Bro Love Doctor show for St. Valentine's Day. Y'all thought I was going to be on some old, let's break down St. Valentine's Day was a Jesuit Illuminati and blah, blah, blah. Nah, hey, let me say something. I don't know. The trigger alert is off. No more stereotyping. No more insensitive ethnic talk. But we had to just come back and look, Jorge. You can't have nobody talking. You know, black folks, we petty queen and queen. Hey, you want to talk? Let's talk. You want to rag? Let's rag. I mean, you can't, you know, you don't want to go there with black folks. We can talk. You want to roll on somebody? We roll back on you. You know. So, hey, you want to have that discussion? Let's have that discussion. You know. And 9 times out of 10, you do have to tell your daughters not to date somebody back. Because if you don't keep that leash on them, you know what they're going to come looking for. You know. you know what I'm saying? You know. You ain't got to tell them not to do something for nothing because, you know. Your sons and daughters, when they get to looking, you know, you can talk all you want. But she, brother show up at the quinceañera and the sister show up at the quinceañera and we start dropping it and swaying. We start showing that African vibrational frequencies. And I can see people get shook. So, you know, if your daughter's a son comes sniffing around the hood, we'll send them back to you unscathed. Like, no, Jesus, no. Go back. Nope. You follow your father's and mother's wishes. No more chocolate for Mexicans. No more. You can have your, and please, y'all eat too much pork and cheese. And it does something to your body chemistry. Everything. You go to a Mexican restaurant, everything. Well, I used to do theater. And every time we had theater, we'd go out to eat. And everybody wanted to eat Mexican food in Mexico. I mean, Missouri, Kansas City is so racist, but they always eating everybody's food that they hate. How can you hate somebody and eat their food? But anyway, we'd go after the play, and we go, everybody wanted to go to Mexican. And I'm vegetarian. Not only that, you know, I don't eat on no swine. Even before I became a vegan, I didn't eat the swine. And everything on the menu was pork and cheese. A pork dish with cheese on it or a cheese dish with pork in it. And that body chemistry. So look, I'm get off this subject. But I'm going to honor your wish, Jorge Lopez. You ain't George no more. George is ours. We Georges. You Jorge now. So give us back our name on our pronunciation and you take your women. Jorge Lopez. Screw you. And your women. No, don't screw your women. We won't screw your women or your men. No more chocolate for Mexicans, y'all. Now, that's what I'm going to tell my son. There's churros or Romo and Sekou. Don't date a Mexican. And I don't know. Don't go on my Xbox account and messing up my stats. Those are the two rules that black children get. I don't know. I couldn't think of a second rule. You know, but no Mexicans for y'all. And no Mexicans for us. Everybody's happy. Anyway, I'm kind of hurt that y'all have not shown faith in my skills. I'm going to go look over the love thing and see, go look at the live, go check Twitter and see if there's any questions. Because when I come back, I'm going to talk about love and relationships. And I was hoping that y'all would tell me, but it's 7:59 in Chicago. We're in downtown Chicago now. We used to be on the north side, getting closer to the hood. Which is good enough for me. I don't have to come too far to get to the station. AM 1680, Q4 Radio, Bro Diallo Show. And, you know, I got to play the hood mating call. The greatest love song ever written in the history of mankind.
When I'm alone in my room, sometimes I stare at the wall, and in the back of my mind, I hear my conscience call, telling me I need a girl who's as sweet as a dove. For the first time in my life, I see I need love. There I was, giggling about the games that I had played with many hearts, and I'm not saying no names. Then the thought occurred, teardrops made my eyes burn, cause I said to myself, look what you've done to her. I can feel it inside, I can't explain how it feels. All I know is that I'm never dishing of the raw deal, playing make-believe, pretending that I'm true. Holding in my laugh as I say that I love you, saying I'm more, kissing you on the ear, whispering I love you and I'll always be here. Although I often reminisce, I can't believe that I found a desire for true love floating around inside my soul, because my soul is cold. One half of me deserves to be this way till I'm old, but the other half needs affection and joy, and the warmth that is created by a girl and a boy. I need love.
So tell me how your tour is going.
Tour's doing good, you know what I'm saying? It's real successful, you know. We selling a lot of tickets. It's just, it's real hectic, you know what I'm saying? Interviews, girls calling me all the time.
Yo, hell,
real
crazy. Go, man.
Love. See what I mean?
My little girl today.
Oh,
listen, what I tell you about these rap guys, huh?
Daddy,
yeah, look, I'm not taking anything out of my hand.
Romance, sheer delight, how sweet. I gotta find me a girl to make my life complete. You can scratch my back, we'll get cozy and huddle. I'll lay down my jacket so you can walk over a puddle. I give you a rose, pull out your chair before we eat. Kiss you on the cheek and say, ooh girl, you're so sweet. It's deja vu whenever I'm with you. I could go on forever telling you what I do, but where you at, you're neither here nor there. I swear I can't find you anywhere. Damn sure ain't in my closet or under my rug. This love search is really making me bug. And if you know who you are, why don't you make yourself seen? Take a chance with my love and you'll find out what I mean. Fantasies can run, but they can't hide. And when I find you, I'ma pour all my love inside. I need love.
Yo, I ain't mean to hurt you before, you know what I'm saying? It's just, I live a hectic life. You know what I'm saying? If you come with me to Atlantic City, I'll make it up to you, though. You still love me or what?
I need love.
Cool.
I mean, I've changed, I'm no longer a playboy on the run. I need something that's stronger. Friendship, trust, honor, respect, admiration. This whole experience has been such a revelation. It's taught me love and how to be a real man. To always be considerate and do all I can. Protect you, you're my lady and you mean so much. My body tingles all over from the slightest touch of your hand. And understand, I'll be frozen in time till we meet face to face and you tell me your mind. If I find you, girl, I swear I'll be a good man. I'm not gonna leave it in destiny's hands. I can't sit and wait for my princess to arrive. I gotta struggle and fight to keep my dream alive. I search the whole world for that special girl. When I finally find you, watch our love unfurl. I need love. Girl, listen to me. When I be sitting in my room all alone, staring at the wall, fantasies, they go through my mind, and I've come to realize that I need true love. And if you want to give it to me, girl, make yourself seen. I'll be waiting. I love you.
Your mom's is so poor, she went to McDonald's and put a shake on layaway.
Oh!
That's the right point.
Is your mother so old, she knew Central Park when it was just a plant?
Your mom's hair so nappy, she gotta take painkillers to comb her hair.
Yo, later for that, man.
This is what's
happening.
You got what I need.
Touch you.
Oh, is it all that, baby?
How about you?
Yo, what's up?
Forget them girls, man.
What's up?
Yo, I got a little story to tell you.
Have you ever met a girl that you tried to date, but a year to make love, she wanted you to wait?
Let me tell you a story of my situation. I was talking to this girl from the U.S. nation. The way that I met her was on tour at a concert. She had long hair and a short miniskirt. I just got on stage dripping porn with sweat. I was walking through the crowd and guess who I met? I whispered in her ear, come to the picture booth so I can ask you some questions to see if you're 100 proof. I asked her her name, she said blah blah blah. She had 9-10 pants and a very big bra. I took a couple of flicks and she was enthused. I said, how do you like the show? She said I was very amused. I started throwing bits, she started throwing back mid-range. But when I sprung the question, she acted kind of strange. Then when I asked, do you have a man? She tried to pretend. She said, no I don't, I only have a friend. Come on, I'm not even going for it. This is what I'm going to say.
You got what I need. But you say he just a friend. And you say he just a friend. Oh, baby, you got what I need. But you say he just a friend. But you say he just a friend. Oh, baby, you got what I need. But you say he just a friend. But you say he just a friend.
So I took blah blah's word for it. This time I thought just having a friend couldn't be no crime. Yes, I have friends and that's a fact, like Agnes, Agatha, Jermaine and Jack. Forget about that, let's go into the story about a girl named blah 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 that adore me. So we started talking, getting familiar, spending a lot of time so we can build a relationship or some understanding. How it's gonna be in the future we was planning. Everything sounded so dandy and sweet. I had no idea I was in for a treat. After this was established, everything was cool. The tour was over and she went back to school. I called every day to see how she was doing. Every time that I called her, it seemed something was brewing. I called her room, a guy picked up and then I called her again. I said, yo, who is that? Oh, he's just a friend. Give me that. On a surprise visit to see my girl that was so exquisite. It was a school day, I know she was there, the first semester of the school year. I went to a gate to ask where was her dorm. This guy made me fill out a visitor's form. He told me where it was and I was on my way to see my baby doll. I was happy to say I arrived in front of the dormitory. Yo, could you tell me where is door 3? They showed me where it was for the moment. I didn't know I was in for such an event. So I came to a room and opened the door. Oh snap, guess what I saw? I felt a tongue kissing my girl in the mouth. I was so in shock, my heart went down south. So please listen to the message that I sent. Don't ever talk to a girl who says she just has a friend. Has a friend, has a friend.
This love is never ordinary revolutionary. This love is never ordinary revolutionary.
That's what the people saying. If you're living for the love of freedom, you will live a free man. This is the only reason me say me love a yard girl. But most of Babylon like a warrior girl. She don't pick up the phone in Babylon girl. She fire up on the back of Jan
whole pod. She the only one who we can run to when we really under pressure. No one in the closet, no one in the dresser. Recognize the enemy, boy, you can't test her. Look off, they strong like Winnie Mandela. Better yet, a satta, true fire starter. Pick up the chest, revolutionary data. Hold on, you can't end in the dance hall. Food, you light a beat on the wall, as a man would say.
This song is never ordinary, revolutionary. This song is never ordinary, revolutionary. This song is never ordinary, revolutionary.
Break up, break up, even in Jamaica. We be rapping revolutionary, but gangsta. Looking for the woman with the Marcus Garvey tattoo. On your ninja back, I might just pull up alongside your mama.
Show you ride with me. Man, tell them about them RBG. Yo, I like them real, trill, gold in the grill. Cold as Pam Grill, swole in the rear. Hard, smart, strong in the heart. Sexy thong when we alone in the dark. Dark skin, red bone. Slim in the waist, them legs so long. A queen, earth, jeans, skirt, head wrapped up. Pippin' them Converse, and she down for the dirt. For better or for worse, got my gun in a purse. Case a nigga get searched. Got a mind like a soda, a body like Trina, a heart like my mama, nigga, tell me how you seen
I need
her.
A girl that's real trail, hold on to steel stairs. Girl that pops off and ain't afraid to peel pills. Mama, you looking tired, that body extra fine. I think you should take a ride on my ninja bike. Oh, you want me to stay, I never leave. And a real black girl's what I want and what I need. She could blow a little weed, but no CIs. A revolutionary girl that know the government lies. The stick thighs, petite frame, shake your thing. It's a RBG love, not no TV thing, you know.
This love is never ordinary, revolutionary. This love is never ordinary, revolutionary. This love is never ordinary, revolutionary.
No, 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 no. See, one more time there, y'all. Flatbush Massive, hold tight. President Street, Nostrand Avenue. Rah!
All right, I started not to come back on the air. Now I told y'all that I was offering love, sex, relationship, intimacy advice on Valentine's Day Eve during the musical break. Revolutionary look, but gangster. No, no. What was that from? Yeah, that was from Revolutionary, but what album was that? I don't know. Dead Prez, Revolutionary Love. And it was called RBG, Real Black Girl. Which was preceded by classic Biz Markie, Just a Friend. So, you know, love ain't all fun and games. And, you know, we started off with the most iconic love song in the history of all human Western civilization and culture. I Need Love by LL Cool J. And who ain't been somewhere where some kid in junior high school, grade school, was banging out that piano riff on the piano? Everybody learned how to play the I Need Love. But anyway, as I was saying, I told y'all that I was offering free love and relationship advice. And if you were too ashamed of the kind of mess you get up to in your relationships, the little nastiness you like, the stuff that titillates you, I said you could send me an email or you could tweet me, sign into my DMs, or go on Facebook and message me. I go to Twitter, I see, oh, I've got 3 messages. And I'm like, okay, some people want to know the deal about love, right? Nope. You know, it was 3 tweets about something I wrote about demagoguery. You know, it was supportive, saying, hey, I think you're right. Someone that agrees with me, I always appreciate that. But that ain't what we're talking about, demagogues, politics. I wanted to talk about relationships and love. And here's another thing that I that just hit me a day or two ago that I never thought of. You know, because you got a lot of conscious black people that you got a lot of conscious black people that do not mess with European holidays. And last night, There's a 2-volume book. I was just thumbing through that text. By Dr. Ishaka, Dr. Reverend, like, let me get it right. Reverend Dr. Ishaka Musa Barashango. Brilliant dude, cold-blooded, wonderful public speaker, magnificent writer. I mean, his book, I'm an Atheist, but even one of my favorite books is Man, God, and the Black Man's Destiny. But anyway, I was thinking, black folks, a lot of the conscious militant, and some of us, even if you ain't one of the conscious black nationalist militants, you got at least one or two of them in your family that don't mess with. And even if you ain't got them, you got Jehovah's Idiots or some other people with ideas where they say, we reject Western holidays. We don't do Christmas. We don't do Halloween. We don't do 4th of July. We don't do Valentine's Day. I'm so conscious. And I think that's wonderful. You know, well-disciplined warriors. But then here's something on the flip side of that. You don't do any of the jovial or celebratory stuff from Western culture, but you do all the miserable stuff. Jobs, banking, money, balancing budget. So you follow all the rules of society. And I just have, I think, what are the kids thinking? Like, this pro-black stuff is miserable. Because even people, great icons, Del Jones, the war correspondent, said, you know, his children were raised in the revolution and raised up around revolution, and none of them are revolutionary. None of them have, they're all just mainstream, hardworking, patriotic Americans. He's like, I couldn't even turn around my own kids. And, you know, I've met at least one of Dr. Khalid's son, not the shiny one, but the other one. I met him in Atlanta. I mean, a decent dude, but he was in no way any reflection on who his father was. You know, he gave me some insights and stories about Dr. Khalid and all that, but he was not a Dr. Khalid. He wasn't even a Dr. Khalid Jr. The dude was just, unimpressive. I met Marcus Garvey's son. I met Dr. Garvey at Wyckoff Hospital. This is years ago. He was no Dr. Garvey. He was Dr. Garvey, but he was no Marcus Mosiah Garvey. And he was a great historian. I never met anyone who knew more about Garvey's history, his movements, his writings and ideas, except maybe Tony Martin probably knew more about Garvey than his own family. But aside from Tony Martin, he's well informed. He goes all over the world giving lectures about Garveyism, the Garvey movement, the UNIA, and very decent, wholesome, humble man. But he wasn't no Marcus Garvey. And I have to think at least some part of it is you have to attribute some of that is you have to attribute some of that to the fact that sometimes militant people can be miserable as hell and make stuff unnecessarily miserable for their own children. And it's just people in the movement, you know. And especially when you reach a certain iconic state, it's almost like you do not want to appear human anymore, be vulnerable, or let your guard down. And I'm just saying something. I'm not saying run out and buy a Christmas tree, run out, because I don't celebrate Valentine's Day. I do not celebrate Christmas. I do not do none of that. But, you know, as I got older and I spend my life embracing and trying to advance the struggle of black liberation and justice and liberate the land and the people and the animals, I started to just get some insights, because I don't celebrate Christmas. My children know from day one, ain't no Santa Claus, ain't no Easter Bunny, ain't no Tooth Fairy, you know, but they got grands and aunties that want to buy them presents, that want to take them to see the latest Pixar movie. They got people, and I don't object to that or obstruct that. I'm like, hey, and I talk to them about it, you know, about, you know, you got these Christmas presents and you unwrap them, and what do you think? And they was like, well, I know Grand, she she's a Christian. We're not Christian. And this is part of her tradition and what she believes. And it makes her happy. And I like the presents. And I love my grand-grand. And if she wants to kick it in the name of Jesus, then, you know, we can kick it in the name of Jesus until we come back to it. You know, so they, I think, at least my older son, has a very healthy grasp of it all. And then about 4 years ago, I'm sitting and thinking, you know, my uncles, shout out Uncle Chris, Uncle Clint, Uncle Carl, my uncles used to do big on 4th of July. And, you know, they go get a brisket or whatever animal carcass that wasn't even properly cut up. I mean, like, what you paying for it for? You might as well just bring the whole damn cow and pig to the picnic. But anyway, they go get these big rib shanks and whatever and barbecue, and they get fireworks, and we setting stuff on fire, blowing stuff up and dancing and cracking jokes. It was all fun. And my family wasn't really drinkers. This was all sober fun, you know, so we did, you know, everything was deliberate and conscious because couldn't even blame it on alcohol. And I'm thought, my son's never, ever shot a bottle rocket. So 4th of July, I went over to Indiana. And if you go on the day of the 4th of July, you don't buy them ahead of time, they're giving that stuff away, 70% off, 85% off. And I bought a couple of packages of bottle rockets and some Black Cat firecrackers, and I took them to this church parking lot. And they just had a ball blowing stuff up, setting stuff on fire. And I just remember when I was about that age, 11, 12, I loved doing that. And it wasn't had nothing to do with the spirit of 76. And overthrowing King George. I saw sparkles and fire and the danger and shooting bottle rockets at other people. So I went and got somebody. I mean, it's not a tradition. You know, it wasn't no big fanfare. I just threw stuff in the backseat and came, you know. And my wife was like, "You're going to kill our boys." And I'm like, at least I'm going to have a good time doing it if I do. So I'm just saying, the struggle going to be there. The revolution going to be there. And shooting off a bottle rocket or accepting a present from your Christian auntie, allowing your son or daughter to accept a present from your Christian auntie on Jesus' birthday, it's not going to turn them into Clarence Thomases. And we got a lot of people who came up, strict vegan diet, no Western holidays, going to African-centered schools, speaking African-centered languages, wearing dashikis, never wearing, you know, Western clothing, and this and that. And when they get old, they grow, marry a blonde-haired, blue-eyed white woman, move to a gated community, and don't ever want to see another black person again. I've seen it with my own eyes. I've met the children of iconic revolutionaries. And now we do have some that carry on the tradition. You know. And I really, for my own sons, I don't want them to be vegan Pan-African revolutionaries because they've been indoctrinated to do so because they know nothing else. I want them to be vegan Pan-African revolutionists because they have been allowed to develop their critical thinking skills. They have been allowed to understand the world that they were born into and the trajectory of that world, and they make a deliberate, conscious, informed decision to adopt a certain lifestyle, personal lifestyle, and a certain purpose and mission to their life based on, I want to just equip, motivate, and educate my children to be independent and thorough thinkers. Beyond that, I would like for them to make their own deliberate and direct decisions. And I think, you know, and rational decisions. And if I raise some rational children, then, you know, I think my lifestyle and purpose for my life is rooted in rationality, and it is refined and improved and it changed. And who knows, my sons might come knock on my door and like, "Dad, you had it all wrong. Embrace America and eat this pork chop." And I'm like, "Okay, state your case." And who knows, they might convince me, you know. And one person that really informed me of that was Neely Fuller. If you go back and read the code system concepts for victims of white supremacy, he kind of says that, you know, under global white domination, you know, everything is owned and controlled by the system. Your children are not really yours. You know, you talk to the Moors and they talk about the sovereign. Oh, excuse me. It's you. Oh, it is dusty in here. Pardon moi. He said, you know, you have to pretty much be partners with your children. You have to ally with your children and other people. you know, as far as trying to be the dominant authority control. You just can't be that, and it's not going to work. Do it because I said so. That'll only get you so far, because there's so many forces and institutions and influences that are more pervasive and more powerful than just you, the voice of you and the wife and a few other people who think as you do. So it's best to equip your child to make good decisions instead of trying to dictate to them what they should do. You know, or if you're really good at manipulating, you can have them doing what you want them to do and convince them that it's their own thoughts. That's another way. I'm just not sophisticated enough to do that one. I've seen some mothers do that, you know. But that's all. That's all I'm saying. It's just only thought. You know, I'm not going from here to buy no damn synthetic cloth, toxic teddy bear, or no, you know, chocolate, free trade, organic, vegan, carob or chocolate. And, you know, we just don't do nothing on Valentine's. Ain't no super special day for us. But, you know, if you see me lighting bottle rockets, don't come and ask for me, my black card. And, you know, if you want to get my son, if you're a Christian and you want to get my sons a present, they will gratefully and graciously accept that present. You know, see, it's just, and I might be wrong. Maybe y'all could tell me, nah, brother. You got to completely shun all the white man whole lot of days. You know, it's a different show for different folks. You know, that's all. And a lot of times for a lot of us, especially us conscious folks, the only time you can get all our people in the room is when the white man says it's appropriate to do so. Okay, holiday, Thanksgiving, black folks will get together on Thanksgiving. People you can't get in the same room no other time. Somebody died, somebody getting married, or the white man announced a holiday. That's it. But then you got Kwanzaa, so you know, you want to bring my son a Kwanzaa gift, a Karenga Day. If you celebrate Karenga Days, whatever, it's your thing. But I'm just saying, if you do stray from the path of militant revolutionary blackness, you will be able to find your way back if you don't go too far off the path. But anyway, that's not even what I wanted to talk about. What I want to talk about today, since, you know, folks is kind of, or even if you ain't into it, I went in to get my wife, had the sniffles, and she wanted some of those lubricated tissues, right? It's just regular tissues ain't good enough anymore. She wanted the soft lotion tissue, I don't know. And so we went into CVS or Walgreens, one of those types of stores, because we... We looked at Whole Foods. They didn't have nothing like that. They had recycled tissues that were laundered from other people. But anyway, I just say use a handkerchief or something that could be washed and reused, because I love Mother Earth. But since she doesn't care about Mother Earth, she wanted disposable tissues. And you go in there and everything, it's hearts and Valentine's stuff, they everywhere. You know, so even if you don't celebrate it, you don't front like you don't know Valentine's Day is tomorrow. And so, you know, this topic would really be relevant for any time, but just now, and oh, I don't even have time to get into it. Maybe I'll pick it up Wednesday, but I want to talk about love and relationship, even though nobody asked me. I wanted some questions. Nobody asked me a question. I'm angry. I'm unhappy that nobody has confidence in me that I could turn their love lives around, get them that man they want, get them that woman they've been running in behind. No, not one question. On my Twitter, somebody wants to talk about demagoguery. That was yesterday's topic. That ain't what we're talking about today. And still not. I just checked again. Nobody has sent me any love questions. Nobody has required that or asked me to fix their love life. But I'm going to do it anyway. First of all, one of the most revealing definitions of love that I've ever come across was William Bradley's definition. And he stated in his book, The Iceman's Inheritance, Prehistoric Explanations for White Aggression, or whatever the subtitle is. He stated that love, you struggle to find an equivalent of the notion of love in non-Western cultures. So they just don't have that notion of love. You know, and there are some words that come close, but no cigar. That's a uniquely Eurocentric concept, the concept of love, believe it or not. And I know Bradley has a lot of his detractors, but he has a lot of supporters, too. Like Dr. Clark was a major booster. I think he wrote the foreword to the Iceman's Inheritance. So Dr. Clark said he's legitimate, then he's legitimate, even though he's a Canadian anthropologist, but he's an honest and insightful Canadian anthropologist. And so he said the state of love, he said that Europeans were so aggressive that they had to create this space where they could be safe within intimate spaces without projecting their aggression at their spouse. And Freud talked about this, the pathos and eros, you know, the constant drive for to destroy and to reproduce, or sex and death. But I don't even want to get that deep into it. I ain't got time. Maybe tomorrow, if I start off with that, maybe I can really get into the psyche. But I'll need somebody here to help pull me out of the depths of that rabbit hole. And he said that it's a state that love is a state where two or more Europeans come together and they coordinate and project their aggression outwards, but not towards each other. And I'm like, I've seen enough romantic comedies to know that that just can't be the case. But when you really look at it, you know, that is kind of the case. So this state of love, and you look at their notion and concepts of love, there's always has to be some grand sacrifice. Like he gave up his crown for the woman. Like the most magnificent Western stories of love involve pain, and it ain't just like something cool. Like, you know, people just come together and there's this Romeo and Juliet. That's the greatest love story in Europe. You know, people dying and hacking each other up and stabbing each other and all that. It ain't love if it ain't turmoil. Like, you can't have the pleasure without the pain. That's sadomasochistic stuff. That, like, all of their, even their romantic comedy, there's always some grand turmoil, some major sacrifice or loss. I give up all my wealth to be with this woman. Or this woman I shun, and I'm willing to cut off my whole family to be with you. It's always this major loss that reinforces the love. Like, I can't love you unless there's some extenuating tragedy to drive us together. So if you look at Michael Bradley's explanation of the Western concept of love, and you look at their idealistic portrayals of love, that's a pretty consistent. You know, and then you might have just a common boring love story. You know, I grew up next to this girl and we went to the same high school and she was my love, my high school sweetheart, and we got married. That's not the kind of stuff. And you have to look at the culture, how they idealize stuff. You know, most of it's mundane. But when they say, you know, what are the highest manifestations of love? What is the love story that we want to continue on through the ages and tell our generations to give people the most idealistic image and impression of how we view and value love? You got to go to Romeo and Juliet. You know, you got to go to that one prince, Moroccan prince, who gave up his crown to be with some trailer, you know, refuse white woman. Like, why can't you have your crown and your wife? I mean, why you got to lose everything? And then they go to cultures, India, Africa, where there's arranged marriage. And what do they say? That's not love. It's like, yeah, but, you know, nobody lost anything. It wasn't no great sacrifice. And, you know, you already knew who you were going to be with. You didn't have to go through all these ups and downs and emotional turmoil and all that fighting and loss, love, loss, and being passed away. You know, it's just like, listen, there's a spouse for you who has all of the grooming, culture, mores, everything that you need to have a functional, healthy spouse to go on and live a functional, productive life. It's already laid out for you. That work has been done for you since you were a child. You know, so here's the group of three girls, or three boys you have to choose from. Pick one of them. Or, hey, take them all. And when white people see that, like, oh, that culture, it's so backwards. Oh, God. No, love is something you fall into like an abyss. Or a septic tank. You just must stumble into it blindly. You must suffer for love. You know? And I don't know. I think I kind of like the Asian African Native method. Like, let's not get too into this. There's way too much other stuff going on than who you individually gonna be with. You know, this is about community. You know, you gotta understand how your individual choices impact the whole. And your individual choices have to take into consideration of the whole. And the whole's collective choices have to respect and take into consider you as an individual. This is all us together. We are a macro multi-mind organism. But we are one as distinguished and unique as we all are, we know we want. And all that. Ubuntu. I am because we are. We are because I am. Whereas white people are like, sacrifice. If you have to sacrifice everyone for love. If you have to sacrifice everything, it's all worth it in the end. If you have love, that's crazy. And then you have to understand something about romantic love, which is a whole nother level. And nothing drives me crazy. As Scheherazade Ali said, you can't be romantic because you ain't a Roman. And you have to understand about something about European history. To really understand the kind of love that we're indoctrinated into and that we're trying to practice. Because nothing black folks love to do is to pretend to be Afrocentric but impose Western standards on each other. Which is why we're crazy and dysfunctional. Especially Afrocentric, African-centered, revolutionary, pro-black, militant couples are some of the most dysfunctional couples. Because you're trying to, you know, mix too many things that don't go together. And I know that might sound contradictory after me talking about bottle rockets and Christmas presents and being pan-Africanist. So I know there's nuance. That's why we need critical thinkers in our struggle, because things are not always as simple as we would like them to be, as clear cut. You know, you have to be ideological and practical, which isn't always the thing. Sometimes ideology will trump practicality. Other times practicality must trump ideology. But you have to always understand, as long as I'm on the same path, same trajectory, and the fundamental principles and the fundamental agenda is stuck to, then we can do that. So, romantic love. Romanticism in the Western context doesn't just mean the Roman era, the Roman Empire. What that means is the most idealized version of everything. So the Roman physique, if you look at Roman sculpture and Roman art, you'll see that there everything must be utter perfection. The Spartans, what did the Spartans do? If they had a baby that had any level of imperfection, they throw it off a cliff. So, you know, the six-pack abs, the strong jawline. It was the idealized perfection of everything. Which is absolute lunacy, which drove them mad. And, you know, there's a wonderful, good book called Insane Caesars. It was an insane culture. It was an insane concept, you know, in the Romantic era. And then after the fall of the Roman Empire and the breakup of the Roman Empire, Europe ran into this place called the Dark Ages, which wasn't really the Dark Ages for the rest of the world. A lot of places thrived. Dr. John Henry Clark basically defines the Dark Ages as the time when Europe was cut off from African culture and resources. That was the Dark Ages. And then the Renaissance or the Reawakening is the time where they regained access to the East and to the South and to the West. When they gained access, when they, you know, it's basically left to their own devices. This culture pretty much starts to deteriorate and cannibalize itself. So they need a constant influx of alien cultures, but at the same time they are severely dependent on alien cultures, on foreign cultures. They also have a pathological need to denigrate and degrade and attack and aggress against the very thing they need. That is the pathos and eros. That is the sex and death drive of European culture. It's even applicable in their politics. They in the Renaissance, they went back to the Roman era and they say, you just go and look up romantic art, and it's very stylized and it's a lot of depth of emotion and detail. But and so the Roman thing, when you say you trying to be romantic with your woman, what you're saying is that the Greco-Roman European philosophy and person is the apex, is the most idealized form, manifestation of humanity. You're basically saying, if I am being romantic, if you, woman, if you want your man to be romantic, or man, if you want a romantic swept off her feet experience with your woman as a black person, you're essentially saying, I want a European relationship, which is the case. It shouldn't be the case, but that is often the case. And you'll notice a lot of women will say, well, man, you need to be able to provide for your woman. And you need to be able to, and they want to have all of the Western standards imposed on your African man. But here's the thing. If you have a man who's a provider and who's a strong and all the things that you say you want a man to be, you got to take the bad with the good. Because those men are also patriarchal, sexist, abusive, emotionally constipated. So we think that we've always thought this in all aspects. We could be capitalists without being omnicidal. We could be Democrats without being anti-black. Yes, because the Democratic Party is the working white man's party. And the working white man is the most, one of the most racist demographics. Working class white folks. Viciously racist. Those are the lynchers. You know, it wasn't the DuPonts and the Carnegies out here stringing us up and mutilating us, cutting off our genitals, putting them in formaldehyde, and posing with our charred bodies. Those weren't white folks in monocles and top hats. Those were poor working class white people. And that's who the Democratic Party was founded by, and who they still, to a large extent, Bubba. Remember they used to call Bill Clinton Bubba from Arkansas? Anyway, we really think we can do things that nobody else can do. We really think we can be pious, righteous, loving Christians, when every other group of Christians have been vicious people who engaged in conquest and genocide. We really think we could be peaceful Muslims. So we really think we can be both romantic and non-sexist, non-patriarchal, and non-dysfunctional, and have healthy relationships. Never seen nobody do that, and where they do that at. But we think we can achieve whatever, and I guess in a way, maybe that's a good thing, because if anybody can do the impossible, I guess it's us. We fly through the air with the greatest of ease, doing 360 dunks with our eyes closed, as Dale Jones was so fond of saying, we do the impossible. But even if we can do the impossible, some things, even if it's possible for us to do, we shouldn't want to do. So my ultimate point is we need to abandon and reject notions of romantic love. Even if we want to celebrate, we can celebrate Valentine's Day, or we want to express our love and cherishing of each other. There should be two, in that same book, he talked about in Egypt, there were two fundamental pillars of any intimate relationship, and that's purpose and stability. So with purpose and stability is what you strive for. And I know it's not as titillating as love, the concept of love. I will die for you. I will give my all for you. Nothing matters but you. And why do you matter so much? Because I care about you, and because I'm the only thing that matters in the universe, then things I care about seem to must matter too. It's not. It's really a self-centered thing. I love you, therefore you have value. No, you have value whether I don't love you or not. If I never seen you, you have us. But see, it's so many levels. And if you see how this plays out. So in the African context, and for lack of a better word, I think it was King Dida said, maybe I said it, and King Dida said, yeah, that's right on. Or maybe he said it, and I'm like, word. But he's like, comedic love. Instead of romantic, in Rome, comedic, going back to Egypt, you know, or Afro love, or some other concept of love that is more healthy, that is more attuned with our inherent values and concepts, that feeds more into addressing our plight and speaking to our needs as a people. That's the kind of love we need. So I ain't saying don't love each other. I'm saying let's love each other in a healthy non-Western context. And if I'm so inclined, maybe I'll get some questions later. If you do send me some love questions, how do you find a spouse and stay with that spouse, stay up off the child care and child support roles? If you need some of those insights from the Brother Dr. Love Show, we'll take it on to tomorrow. Y'all have a good evening, a good morning, good afternoon, and a good evening. thanks for tuning in. This is Bro Diallo Show. I'm signing off, but most definitely, find your way to the Bro Diallo page. You see it's the archives are being updated daily once again. I got over the glitches. I'm going to expand the page. I'm going to expand this media, pan-African, pro-African propaganda media network, right? With your help. So kick in, get in where you fit in, and let's make it happen, people. I sure enough appreciate y'all. Peace, Bro Diallo. AM 1680, Q4 Radio. Shout out to Dr. Obari Cartman and the African American Psychologist Organization. Well, I can't remember the name of the acronym, but for the violence and mental health panel discussion, I was very grateful to be invited out to be able to share and build and listen to some other stories. So shout out and appreciation that. You can find that video also on the Dr. Obari Cartman page, Facebook, or drobaricartman.com. Oh, and make your way to African World Order, Cooperative Enterprise, Communal Economics. Get your dopest, flyest gear at AfricanWorldOrder.com for African World Order Apparel.